Some days call for working up a sweat, working on your passion, and endless action. Ditch the glitch with Liquid IV's new Energy Multiplier Sugar-Free. Refreshing flavors like strawberry kiwi and blackberry lemonade. Scientifically formulated to support physical energy, hydration, focus, mood, and social stamina. Liquid IV's new Energy Multiplier Sugar-Free. Hydrating energy. Tap the banner to learn more.
Pro savings days are back at Lowe's. My Lowe's Pro Rewards members save even more with limited-time doorbuster deals. Save $5 on 24-count Contractor's Choice 42-gallon trash bags, now just $14.78. Plus, get your choice select DeWalt Elite Series saw blades for $9.98. Not a Pro Rewards member? Join for free today at Lowe's. Valid through 9/17. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, loyalty programs subject to terms and conditions. See Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
Popsicles, sprinklers, a cool breeze. Talk about refreshing. You know what else is refreshing this summer? A brand new phone with Verizon. Yep, get a new phone on any plan with Select Phone Trade-In and My Plan. And lock down a low price for 3 years on any plan with My Plan. This is a deal for everyone, whether you're a new or existing customer. Swing by Verizon today for our best phone deals. 3 year price guarantee applies to then current base monthly rate only. Additional terms and conditions apply for all offers.
Your sausage McMuffin with egg didn't change. Your receipt did. The sausage McMuffin with egg extra value meal includes a hash brown and a small coffee for just $5. Only at McDonald's for a limited time.
Prices and participation may vary.
Hi, this is Tony Ruggiero. Thanks for listening to The Tour Coach. This is part one of a great town hall meeting we did up at Bluebell Country Club up outside of Philadelphia with my good friends John Dunnigan, Wayne Flint, Connor Luke, and Matt Rudy sitting in to kind of lead us all around and talk about the world of golf and how we can help all of you play better. Sit back, relax, enjoy, and let's all get better at the game together.
All right, so I want to thank everybody for coming out. This will we'll have Bluebell send a link out to everybody, but it'll go out next Tuesday on my podcast and radio show and all that. But and this is all about helping recreational golfers or golfers of all skill level get better. And everybody knows I love coming up here to Bluebell. I got family in the area, so I love when I get the opportunity to come up here. It's exciting to bring these folks out to Bluebell. So I'm going to introduce everybody. Everybody knows Connor Luke, I hope, but Connor's doing a great job. Connor's doing a great job teaching for us here. I'll probably yell at him later this weekend, but he's doing a great job right now. Good friend and longtime mentor, Wayne Flint, here in from Birmingham, Alabama. Yep. And one of my dear friends was the longtime instruction editor for Golf Digest. Now he is a jack of all trades, does a lot of stuff in golf media and helping golf teachers, Matt Rudy. And last, but certainly not least, one of the teaching legends in and around Philadelphia, one of the great teachers, good friend, John Dunnigan. Couldn't think anybody else I'd rather come have hang out. So this is all about, we're going to get it started a little bit, but we're just going to talk, we want to take your questions and give you some answers on how to help everybody play better, about how you can play better, and we can help find some answers for you. So, and Matt's going to obviously, with his experience, he'll kind of emcee this and kind of host it. He's a better host than me. So anyways, we're going to start. First of all, do we have any questions or? Yes, sir.
My question is like a four-part question.
That's okay.
It seems like, how important is the range in terms of the parts of it are? Should you work on bills? Should you work on
you want to start with that, John? That's right up. I mean, you couldn't have pitched you a better.
Your hands don't swing the club. Your brain does. Your brain swings the golf club, not your hands. Okay? So a real interesting point. I talk about this with my kids all the time. I teach a lot of kids, lots. And they say, well, under pressure, you know, and I go, time. And I know this sounds horrible, but the kids in Ukraine are under pressure. You're standing in a park waving a stick. Lighten up a little bit. Like, sometimes if you zoom out, like, there's a young man. You zoom out here. You're getting all upset about golf. Zoom out from 1,000 feet above and look down at yourself. And ask yourself, does this really, really matter? And I'm so glad what Scottie Scheffler said last week. This game is not going to define me. And most golfers die by each golf shot. Took me a long time to figure that one out. I would say this. When you go to the range, do you calibrate your shots? Oh, curiously enough, I have a brand new app called the Practice Coach out for that.
Unbelievable.
Go figure. But are you calibrating the shots you're going to need in the golf course? Are you working on your swing? And I gave you a good one. He knows not to get me started talking. One of my students came in and she goes, I stink.
We can cut the mic off.
Yes. Oh, good. I really, really stink. And I go, okay, cool. What's going on? She goes, I'm not hitting it solid. I go, well, what are you focusing on? What are you paying attention to during the swing? During. Not in the practice swing. In the swing focus. And she goes, well, I'm trying to shift my weight. And I gave her a big smile. I said, toward what goal? And she gives me a big smile back. She goes, I don't know. So now she's focusing on a mechanic of her swing with no intent to deliver the golf club to the golf ball. So what you want to start doing is going, okay, what does the golf ball want me to do differently with my golf club? Then do something differently in your golf club, which you can't do if you're not paying attention. Make sense?
Yeah. I mean, I think, to go to your question, one, I agree with all that. But I had a student earlier today that didn't know how to practice, went and beat balls for 2 hours every day, but wasn't getting better. And so I think part of our job is to provide structure for how to practice, teach players how to practice. And I think one of the first things that's important is for you to understand what you're working on and why, and what the effect on the golf ball is. I think one reason folks don't get better is I think they go work on something because they've been told to work on something, but they don't necessarily understand why they're working on it and what that's going to do to the golf ball. And so, but I like to structure practice for people with where it's very specific and they have specific intent. And I like to put things in little, like 3 to 5 ball stacks where you're working on something for 5 balls, and you may have a, but I use a lot of resistance bands and drills like that to help people get feels. So I like to have somebody hit 5 balls, and then after 5 balls, do 5 of these exercises, then hit another 5 balls. And I think one thing that's also important is if you're working on something mechanical, like you can't necessarily, if you're working on something, maybe a move, whatever it is, you can't necessarily be concerned where the ball's going at the first part. Like, you can't beat yourself up if the ball isn't worth the shit for a while, right? So, you know, I think in the end, to get really good at golf, you've got to do all different types of practice. You've got to do some stuff where you work to make a change and you understand why. And then I think you have to do practice where you're trying to execute shots and it's only about hitting a shot at a target. I think you got to do a little bit of everything. Bueno?
Well, one of the things that I think is really important when you're going to practice is to understand what you're going to try to do, have a specific idea of what you're going to work on that day. I like my players to write it down on a little index card or something like that, the 1, 2, or 3 things they're going to try to accomplish during their session. I agree 100% with Tony. I like them to work in little short bursts of trying whatever the fundamental is they're trying to learn. And then I like one thing that hadn't been mentioned yet. I really like my people to slow down enough where they can tell whether they're doing what they're trying to do. A lot of people assume because they're trying to do something that they're in fact doing it. And that's not always the case. So I like my people to slow down to achieve whatever the fundamental is they're trying to do. And I also like them to stay slow so that when they start to bring it down to the ball,
they can see what that club is doing to apply it to the ball. Like John said, I think being aware of what's happening to the ball through what new fundamentals you're trying to learn, I think that's really important. I like my students to be very organized going in. I don't want them to stay there for hours and hours and hours. I want them to go with specific objectives and not practice by the hour, but practice by the objective.
Say that thing about golfers are the worst practice.
Yeah, golfers, I've got an article at home. It's an old article that said, it's written by Dr. Kuth, and it said that golfers are the worst practicers in all of sports. They practice by the hour rather than the objective, and often they end up with worse fundamentals when they're done than when they start. So I think you got to really make sure that when you're doing your block practice on the range, that you're doing it slow, intentional, and you know, realizing what the club's doing to the ball so you can change the patterns you're trying to change.
Yeah, I'm not a coach, but I'm a professional observer.
And I did sleep at a Holiday Inn Express.
One of my oldest friends in golf, and Tony's heard the story, is Randy Smith, who teaches Scotty Scheffler. And I started going to see Randy 25 years ago, and I met Scotty Scheffler when he was a six-year-old. And so I watched that kid. He bird-dogged all the video shoots and photo shoots we did for Golf Digest. And I watched him grow up and into what he is. And the big thing that he always did was gamify what he was doing. So if a tour player was trying to hit a certain shot, he was in the background mimicking the player doing that. If so-and-so was, if Justin Leonard was trying to hit a pole on the range, Scotty was trying to hit a pole on the range. So what he was trying to do was add stakes to everything he did in his practice. There's no differentiation between practice and playing. Practice, there's an objective, there's pressure, you're trying to achieve something in practice, so that way when you go play the game, the point is the same in the game as it was in the practice routine. I think a lot of people, they might try to create a very serene practice situation where your emotions are lower, the lies are perfect, you're doing the same thing over and over again. That isn't what golf is. Golf is on different lies, the wind is different, somebody's got a better score than you and you're trying to catch them. So all of that gamified practice and betting quarters and betting dollars and tour players and jabbering at him and getting the needle out, all those things created a competitive aspect for him that made the practice much more like playing.
Yeah, I mean, these guys have all hit the nail on the head, but I think there's a part of it too that you gotta have fun like while you're doing it. If you're a kid, like you gotta really enjoy being out there. One of the kids we taught earlier, like he grinds 3-4 hours a day, but he like really enjoys it. He loves doing it. And I think you have to have some of that in you if you want to get better. And it could be for different reasons. But learn why you like to play and why you like to practice, not just that you're good at it.
At Sierra, discover top workout gear at incredible prices, which might lead to another discovery. Your headphones haven't been connected this whole time. Awkward. Discover top brands at unexpectedly low prices. Sierra, let's get moving.
Eczema isn't always obvious, but it's real. And so is the relief from Ebglyss. After an initial dosing phase, about 4 in 10 people taking Ebglyss achieved itch relief and clear or almost clear skin at 16 weeks. And most of those people maintain skin that's still more clear at 1 year with monthly dosing.
Ebglyss, lebrikizumab, LBKZ, a 250 mg/2 ml injection, is a prescription medicine used to treat adults and children 12 years of age and older who weigh at least 88 pounds or 40 kilograms with moderate to severe eczema, also called atopic dermatitis, that is not well controlled with prescription therapies used on the skin or topicals, or who cannot use topical therapies. Ebglyss can be used with or without topical corticosteroids. Don't use if you're allergic to Ebglyss. Allergic reactions can occur that can be severe. Eye problems can occur. Tell your doctor if you have new or worsening eye problems. You should not receive a live vaccine when treated with Ebglyss. Before starting Ebglyss, tell your doctor if you have a parasitic infection.
Searching for real relief? Ask your doctor about Ebglyss and visit ebglyss.lilly.com or call 1-800-LILLY-RX or 1-800-545-5979.
When did making plans get this complicated? It's time to streamline with WhatsApp, the secure messaging app that brings the whole group together. Use polls to settle dinner plans. Send event invites and pin messages so no one forgets mom's 60th. And never miss a meme or milestone. All protected with end-to-end encryption. It's time for WhatsApp. Message privately with everyone. Learn more at whatsapp.com.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. Checking off the boxes on your to-do list is a great feeling. And when it comes to checking off coverage, a State Farm agent can help you choose an option that's right for you. Whether you prefer talking in person, on the phone, or using the award-winning app, it's nice knowing you have help finding coverage that best fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
He's got like TikTok and all these Instagrams, but there's who? Because in the round,
that stuff is making me rich, by the way.
the question was
keep
to,
it up
to learn this. Who do you follow?
Well, obviously the obvious question is the obvious answer is the Dew Sleeper here. I mean, let's face it. I mean, y'all know. But I think there's lots of good folks out there to follow. But again, I think that the secret and the recipe to success is just like what Matt just talked about, Scotty with Randy, is to find somebody in your area that's made people really good and has a track record and that you develop a relationship with and that you stick with it. And I think that I had this conversation, oddly enough, with Smiley Kaufman not the other day. I think that how people mimic what the best players in the world do, I think because Scotty has openly talked about how Randy's been with him the whole time up and down, that you're going to stop seeing as many players jump around for a while, and you'll see more people who are, they stick with somebody. And I think that most real success stories, a good junior or a good player, somebody with talent or a desire to get good, find somebody that they click with, that's had success, and they stick with them through highs and lows. Most of the disasters that I've seen through my career where people were good and then they get terrible come when they jump around. Very seldom does that happen with somebody who sticks with somebody for the long term. So I think it's good to go get information off of social media and see what's out there. But I would take those ideas to somebody you trust that knows you, knows your body, knows how you practice, knows what you're going on, what's going on at home, all of those things, right? And let them guide you. I think that's important.
When you're working on a golf swing, so if you're working on your swing, I think Scottie Scheffler might be the biggest gift to golf. Because remember the old Jim Furyk octopus falling out of a tree? This is actually your worst golf swing. Except he has phenomenal ball control skills. I think it would be interesting to see how many people are chasing a golf swing for the looks purposes rather than actually using the golf tool to create golf shots. And then you get a poor kid. Look at that kid. He's so good looking. He's eating food. Needs a haircut. And he's out there working his butt off to get this aspect of his swing without actually knowing how he wants to, or how it's going to influence his club delivery. Now he's going to go, this teacher sucks. He taught me this.
Don't tell him that. That's working. My lesson tomorrow. I got a lesson.
See, yeah. Well, you won't get that, right? But to what Tony said earlier was like, if you're working on swing, the only performance you're looking for at first is, am I doing it differently? You guys all know damn well that you have spent many, 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 many fruitless practice sessions, not the girls because they're too smart for that,
Chloe,
where you have actually had a new swing thought and it's the same exact old swing. Right?
Whatever.
That means you're practicing without feedback, and maybe, to Wayne's point, you're practicing at a speed that you can't alter what you're doing. And when you have that stuff going on, it's a recipe for failure, and the coach might have been giving you perfect, absolutely accurate information, but the way you're trying to learn it is unsound.
I'm just going to say one thing, too. I think that people assume that if they go practice and they hit bad shots, that what they're trying to do is wrong, and never take into account that they may not have done it. Right?
All day long.
Right. And that's because, going to Wayne's point, they go at it, that somebody tells them to do something and they go at it fast and they go, oh, well, shit, that didn't work. So what? Now what are we going to do? And they haven't even come close to doing it. And that's why I think what Wayne said is so, so important. If you're really trying to change something, you've got to do something at a speed you can actually do.
So one thing I'm always trying to learn more, and I try to go into every day trying to become a better teacher. I mean, there are days where I wonder, am I really any good at this, right?
No.
Yeah. And so I learned, you know, I've known Tony forever, and I was an early influence on him, but I've learned more from him than he ever learned from me, because, you know, he's gotten involved with so many great teachers through his media and all that stuff. And so, you know, I heard something the other day, and I thought it was one of the best things I've heard in a long time. And they were talking about pressure and doing something on a golf course. And Tony hangs out with a guy named Colby Tullier a lot. He's a great physical guy. He trains a lot of the guys on tour. And he's really, really good at it. And I've learned so much listening to him. And he said the other day, when they were talking about getting on the golf course and having pressure, to your comment, he said one of the things that is the most calming thing in the world is to be able to stand over a shot and ask your body to do something that you know it can do. And so, you know, for so many years, you know, a lot of stuff was, you know, we weren't supposed to lift a lot of weights. We weren't supposed to do all that stuff when I was a kid, right? Because we wanted to be flexible and fast and all that stuff. And I think we still want to be flexible and fast and all that stuff. But there's no doubt the tour players are getting stronger and they're hitting the ball further and they're better athletes than we ever were, you know, 30 years ago. And, you know, to hear one of the best in the world say that asking your body to do something that it's prepared to do is a calming influence to your brain and your psyche, and you don't get as nervous, and you don't lose control of your emotions when you're out there if you're in control. So that's another reason I like to get people to do things slowly, because even if their bodies aren't prepared to go 100 miles an hour, they can still learn new motor patterns and they can still learn new nuances in their golf swing that may make them fundamentally better, make them put the club face on the ball a little square and hit the ball a little bit more solid, and then maybe that'll help convince them to maybe do a little more stretching or strengthening or whatever the case may be. So I thought that was something that was great just a few days ago that I had never heard anybody say before.
I've actually got a book coming out next week with Mark Blackburn, who's a top coach. He coaches a bunch of tour players, and it's called The Coaching Code. And one of the stories in the book is that made a lot of sense to me, is that sometimes there's an expectation among players now that there should be no friction or no struggle, or something, it should be easy. If I have a good lesson, if somebody tells me the right stuff, I should get it and be flushing shots right away. And Mark makes the important point that struggle is a part of learning something. So I think, I mean, I've got three girls, 16, 13, and 11, and they're give up quotient definitely varies sometimes, where if they have a little bit of a challenge, sometimes they might just stop doing it, because there's so much stimulation now and so much immediate gratification in a phone or whatever else you're doing, that the tendency is to stop doing that and try to find something else that's easier or more satisfying to do. But I think the best players and the best coaches that I've seen are ones that together understand that parts of this are going to be difficult and I might not get it right away. And the coach steps back and lets the person marinate in the struggle a little bit, because the art and the process of self-discovery and learning how to do it is what makes that skill more durable. So I think, you know, friction is okay. Struggling is okay. It's okay to be bad. It's okay to hit grounders. I've watched Tiger Woods hit hundreds of bad golf shots and tens of thousands of good ones, but the bad ones are there, and that frustration is part of it.
These guys are really good. There's a paragraph in Butch Harmon's book. Everyone knows Butch, obviously, but Butch is on the range with a guy, and the guy's struggling. He's shanking it, and he can't figure out how to help him. And he runs inside to the pro shop where his dad is, and he says, Dad, this guy's shanking it. I've told him what he needs to do, and it's not working. And Bill gets up out of his chair, walks down to the range, and fixes him in one swing, basically. It was what Butch says. So he tells him two things, fixes it, guy hits it straight. Next one, guy hits it straight. He turns around and goes, "Dad, how'd you do that?" And he said, "Until you learn to dig it out of the dirt, you'll never do it. Or you'll never understand it." And I thought that was really good. And that's something that Tony's been good to me about, not babying me when I'm complaining. Like, he's really hard, and but he doesn't overcoach you. Like, he'll tell you three or four things. He'll tell you what you need to do, but he won't hold your hand through it. He'll make you go do it. And so then I think that's good as a player too. Like, you're right, at some point we put too much into the video, we put too much into all the other things and asking people, and what do you think about this, what do you think about that, can you film me here, instead of sitting there on your own in the corner of the range and figuring out how to get the ball to fade or whatever you want it to do.
Wait a second, can I just do one thing before you say that?
Sure.
All right, so do you ever go bowling? Your kids go bowling. They put up the bumpers. When you're hitting bad shots or making bad swings, let's say that you're trying to learn how to hit you've been slicing it for your career, and you're trying to hit a draw, and you hit one what we call left of Nancy Pelosi. And you say, well, that's no good. And I will say, that's the left bumper. That left bumper is terribly important feedback for you, right? Did you ever try to do that? Did you ever try to hit the other side, and then hit the other side, the right bumper? If you don't hit the bumpers, you can't figure out Goldilocks. There it is. Okay, go ahead, please.
You guys talk about short bursts, like practices. Mm-hmm. Like, are you trying to, like, can you give me an example of that? Are you trying to, like, hey, I want to cut a 7-iron. Hey, I want to draw a 3-wood. Like, hey, I want to cut a 3-wood. Like, what's a short burst example
of what you're trying to do? I think it depends, one, on what you're working on, and where, if you're, one, you're working on, I'm just going to use the lesson this afternoon as an example. And so what we told this young guy to do was we put balls in 5 ball stacks, okay? And he would hit 5 balls going real slow, just like Wayne was there, just like he wants. And we would film one of the 5, and we would sit down and say, is this looking like what you want it to look like, right? So he's getting feedback, see if he doesn't. Then he would hit another, then he'd hit the next 5, and he would be trying to hit a shot at a target, right? Like an 8-iron at that black flag out there. And he would change targets each swing. So that's what you have to do on the golf course. And then he'd go back and do another 5, and he did 3 reps of those, okay? So, like, that's a structured practice. I'm big on giving players ball counts. I think if you go and you go with a time, or I'm just going to go practice for an hour, I don't know that you get as much out of it. But if you go and you say, I want to hit 45 balls broken down into these things that I'm working on, whatever it is, and then when I'm done, I'm done. I've been very deliberate on what I'm doing. I've been focused on what I've done. I filmed a couple times to give myself some feedback. Like John said, I love the stuff of, you know, trying to overhook it this way or fade it that way or whatever. So you've got structured practice, you got a ball count, you know what you're working on, and you give yourself feedback. And then when you're done, you're done. You don't just talking about Smiley earlier, he's the king of practice until he started hitting his shitty. Like, I can't tell you how many sessions we would start and he would hit it unbelievable for 35 minutes. And then we'd end up out there for 4 hours because 45 minutes into it, he'd hit a bad shot and we'd have to go figure that out, right? I was the king on tour of him if he hit it good for 25 minutes, like just packing everything up and walking to the green, right? Like, because we'd get to where it was going to be bad. So
I think it can be dangerous.
Right. I think everybody's different. You need to know what you're working on and why. You need to know what drills or ways to give yourself feedback. And then based on how much time, you can have a super good practice in 40 balls, 45, don't you think?
Yeah.
Absolutely. I've played 54 whole holes this year so far. And I practice, I have a little time is very limited. So I went out, practiced a little bit in my little studio at home, and I went out and played, and I hit the ball beautifully. Mm-hmm. The reason is I used my practice time to calibrate my feel. I have a question for you guys. When you swing the golf club, do you ever pay attention to the weight of the club head? I asked a lot of tour players this, and nobody has said, of course I can feel the club head. Are you like, the response was, are you an idiot? But if you look at the most golfers in the world, they actually don't know that they're actually swinging a club head. They have no idea of the weight on the end of the stick, much less the club face orientation, right? Think about that kind of stuff. When you're out there, you're struggling, and you have no idea where the club is in your hands, you're gonna struggle a lot, possibly forever.